Welcome to another episode of the Svarim Chatter podcast. I'm Nachi Weinstein. Some programming notes here on the podcast. The next episode will probably be the Sunday after Pesach, May 5th, so about 2 weeks from now. And at that point, we'll resume the 10 Lost Tribes series. I'll try to give a brief synopsis before, but that will be, we'll resume with episode 9, which is Antonio de Montezinos, Aaron Halevi, and then Menashe ben Yisrael, and we'll continue on and stay tuned for that. Just a general programming note is something that I'm working on. I'm planning and working on two potential series, one on Jewish travelers throughout the ages and their travelogues, and another on the early American Orthodox rabbinate. For both of those, if anyone has any guest suggestions, topic ideas, or would like to sponsor either series or to sponsor an individual episode, please email me, svarimchatter@gmail.com, or you can message me on WhatsApp. If you're on the WhatsApp chat, you can reach out that way. Also, in general, if you're always willing to take guest suggestions, I'm a little backed up on that, but I'm always willing to take guest suggestions and episode, topic ideas, as well as any support for all those that have, supported. I appreciate it. You can sponsor an episode. You can check out the links in the show's notes, and you can also email me again, svarimchatter@gmail.com, or use the link in the show's notes. And I very much appreciate anything that anyone gives and any sponsorship. So thank you. Also, I'll mention and I'll put a link. I recently published a sefer, a critical edition, a Torah Chaim, a Masechta Avodah Zarah, edited on the 1634 edition of Avraham Chaim Shor. And there's the lengthy introduction with color scans. There's also all the old Haskamas are put back, the old Hakdamas, the introduction of the Teres Chaim himself, his son-in-law and his sons. Those have not been printed since 1634. I also included many censored passages been put back. The text has been corrected, footnotes, sources, an appendix where the rest of the other parts of Shas where it was censored. So much more. Stay tuned to an podcast episode on that, Emirat Hashem. But for those interested in purchasing it, it can be purchased from me directly in Lakewood. Again, you can email me or WhatsApp me. And additionally, it's available at Mizrahi Books. It's also at Beagle Eisen. It's at Judaica Plaza in Lakewood and Zundel Berman. I'll put a link in the show's notes for those interested in purchasing it. And thank you if you were interested in purchasing it. And finally, you can subscribe to the Svarim Chatter YouTube channel, the Svarim Chatter Substack, the Svarim Chatter WhatsApp community, all that. There'll be links in the show's notes. And you can also please subscribe and rate the podcast, review the podcast 24/6. Apple, Spotify, wherever you listen. And with that, Chag Kosher v'Sameach to everybody and enjoy the episode. Hi, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Svarim Chatter podcast. On this episode of the podcast, I'm going to be joined once again by Rabbi Eli Simcha Hellman, who is the Reish Kol and Reish Machoin of Kol Achsanya Shel Torah. And this time, we'll be discussing a brand new publication, a brand new Haggadah that the Machoin just published, which is the Haggadah Shel Pesach Likutei Yosef, Rabbi Yuspa Shamas, which name is actually Rabbi Yiftach Yosef, and he's called Mechuna Yuspa Shamas, and he was the Shamas in Vermeiza, in Worms. He died in 1698, to give you a sense of when he was, and we'll talk more about him briefly in a minute. He's also more, I'm going to say more famous, but I don't know that he's really more famous for this. Two volumes, Minhagim of the Kal Kodesh Vermeiza, spelled with a shin. This was published by Mechon Yerushalayim in two volumes, an extensive biographical introduction there by Professor Eric Zimmer, Yitzchak Zimmer. And also, there's Haggais, there's extra things in there from the Chavis Yor, Yerachayim Bakrach, who was also from Worms. So, this is who we're dealing with. This is a brand new Haggadah. And, well, first of all, thank you, Rabbi Hellman, for joining me once again.
Okay, thank you, Nachi, for having me back on.
So, it's funny, as I have joked, that a lot of Haggadahs come out every year, and this year is no difference. I think on the thread I have going on on Twitter or X and on the WhatsApp chat, there's around 40 now, and I'm sure there's more that I don't have on there. So there's more. It's always between 40 and 60 Haggadahs, English and Hebrew. But I don't mean to minimize and say not many are worthwhile, but there's not many that are real. There are not many real Haggadahs. A lot of Likutim collections and what have you. They don't personally speak to me, and it's not so often anymore that we get either a new edition of something chashiv or a brand new Haggadah from manuscript like this. So actually, it says Madura Tinyana because you published it last year in a paperback in a limited run, but now it's completely re-edited. So we're going to call it new because no one really had it last year. And so this is Haggadah of Rabbi Yisrael Shamash, a very chashiv individual we'll talk about, and we'll talk about later on at the end about the story of the manuscript and how you got it and where it's from and all of that. So let's just jump right into it. And it's a very interesting Haggadah. So let's talk about it. So let's talk about Rabbi Yisroel Shamash to start. As we said, I mentioned his name is Rabbi Yiftach Yosef, not a common name, Yiftach, obviously from Nach. So what's his background? What's his biography?
So Rabbi Yisroel, better known as Rabbi Yisroel, lived, was born in 1604 in Fulda, actually. So he's not a native to Worms. Fulda is about a two-hour drive from Worms today. So it's northeast of Frankfurt and of Worms. And he's actually lives in a very interesting time period. He's living at the point where it's sort of switching over from what we would call the early Achrenim to the later Achrenim, or a different way to put it would be from the period of the Hasidei Ashkenaz and the Mekubalim of Ashkenaz, the well-known Mekubalim of Ashkenaz, you know, that wrote about Kabbalah, as opposed to the more Achrenim style, where they are being mefaltel on Shas and writing those types of Svarim, and opening up those types of yeshivas that are focused on a machzer of mesechtes and things like that. So Rabbi Yisroel finds himself as a Talmud of some of the greatest Mekubalim and Baalei Shem of Ashkenaz. And he's sort of, you know, hanging on to them and bringing out their Torah, some of which he's just being matik. It's interesting that you said most Haggadahs are Likutim, and this is actually Likutei Yosef. This is a Likut, but we'll get to that soon, exactly what is comprised in this manuscript and what we actually published. So that's one interesting part, that he's coming on the end of this period of Rabbi Akiva Frankfurter and Rav Hertz Schatz, Rav Hertz Trevis, right? Rav Hertz Schatz of Frankfurt and many others. They're slipping my mind. But that Tekufa of Gedolei Ashkenaz, who were Mekubalim, the Beis Medrash of Yehuda HaChassid. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're forgetting his Rebbe, really old Baal Shem, the old Lumat of Worms. Made a Goylem, right?
Yeah. Hang on. So we'll get to Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem. That's one interesting part. The other interesting part, which obviously plays a lot of in his lifetime, is that the 17th century is a very, very difficult period for all people in Europe, and especially for Jews. The 30-Year War began in 1618. So that's, Rabbi Yisroel was 14 years old. And that was probably the reason why he ended up leaving Fulda and heading towards, and ended up settling in Worms. So the 30-Year War was basically decimated Europe, besides for the diseases and everything else, but just the wars. And we're talking about estimated, I think, between like 4 to 8 million people, some areas of Europe, 50% of the population decline. We're talking like this was a serious period in Europe. So that definitely, and besides for that, the city of Worms, where he eventually set up his home, I think was sacked like two or three times, and Jews were expelled from Worms two or three times during the 1700s. Not necessarily during his lifetime, but prior to him getting there and afterwards, which is why the Ksav Yad ended up having a little bit of a tour of Europe, let's put it that way. So those are definitely two interesting things that made up Rabbi Yisroel's life. And he sort of laments in his Hakdama, which is printed here, he laments the fact that he ended up becoming a Shamish and not the Talmud Chacham that he maybe would have wanted to be, which is interesting because he was definitely a Talmud Chacham. One of the ways to just point this out right in the beginning, so people don't see, I think, as we discussed, that some people think that a Shamish is the old man who, you know, grumpy old man in the back of shul who's telling everyone to be quiet during davening. Rav Yisroel was definitely not, I mean, maybe he did tell people to be quiet during davening, I don't know, but he definitely was, that was not his main tafkid. He was, first of all, he was a sheikhet, a seifer, and a mayel of the city of Worms. He was well-known. There was other mayelim in Worms, it's clear from his ksavim, but he was definitely well-known for that. Besides that, he was clearly a massive Talmud Chacham from his writings. And he was also considered a very chashuv person, as he was one of the people who actually was maspid his Rebbe, Rebbe Eliyahu Baal Shem. So that is definitely something to put into context. So he was born again in 1604 in Fulda, and he learned by Rebbe Pinchas Horowitz of Prague, if I'm not mistaken. Not the same Rebbe Pinchas Horowitz, the Hafla, who lived 200 years later, almost 150 years later. So definitely not the same person. And in 1624, which we only know that date because in his Sefer Maisanisim, he writes his first story. He writes that he heard this story from his Rebbe, Rabbi Eliyahu Baal Shem, when he came to Worms in 1624. So that's how we know that he traveled to Worms with Rebbe Eliyahu Loanz, Rebbe Eliyahu Baal Shem. He was also in Fulda. So we know that they both came in that year, 1624, to Worms. And different historians are debating why he came at that point. It's possible that it was because of the 30-Year War, which was decimating Europe, and 1624 was when England and other countries who were involved were trying to make it work out a peace treaty of some sort, which didn't end up holding. So it's possible that there was a lull in the fighting at that point, so he decided to move. The more obvious reason is that David Yeshayahu Oppenheim, who I think is the uncle of the famous David Oppenheim, he shares the same name, I think it's an uncle. So he was one of the parnosim of Worms, and he ended up building the extension to the shul, which today is known as the Rashi shul, which obviously is built 500 years after Rashi and has nothing to do in particular with Rashi, except that the legend has it that way. But likely there was this base medrash that was built, and his Rebbe, Rebbe Leo Baal Shem, moved to Worms, so that's probably why he moved in that year. So that's the basic background, I think, to cover reviews for Shamish and who he was and what he was dealing with and why he was basically entering a kehila, which was one of the oldest kehilas. I think it's important to mention that Worms, I'm sure most people who are listening know this, but Worms was literally one of the three kehilas that make up Ashkenaz, right? The kehila Shum, which was considered the basis of Ashkenaz. Shum is Speyer and Vermeisa and Mainz, right? Speyer, Worms, and Mainz. So these were one of the oldest. These are the oldest kehilas in Germany. And what's interesting is that in his Maisanisim, which we'll get to, but it's I guess important to say here, he writes that the reason why Worms was some of the kinnis that we say on Tisha B'Av is about Worms being destroyed. Actually, it's he writes over there that the reason why they were so badly punished, so to speak, during the Crusades was because they existed since the times of Ezra and they didn't come back. So that story definitely can be questioned in historical context, whether or not there were Jews there at that point. But he actually writes that, and that story is also recorded again. I think it's in the Neue Kitzin Yosef. I didn't have time to check it out, but I think it's also Neue Kitzin Yosef. But I think that Reb Yusuf is the one who originally wrote this, and that's where we know the story from. So that's a synopsis of Reb Yusuf's background.
Yeah, a couple of things to jump in. So first of all, the 30 Years' War, for those that are familiar, this, as you said, is ravages Europe, and this has to do with the Reformation and the Counter-Reformation and the Protestants and the Catholics and everything that's splitting apart the Christian church. Now, Worms, as you say, is one of the... I've talked about Worms in the podcast previously. This is the Heilige Gersan Cemetery, one of the oldest cemeteries in Europe. I think the cover there, there's a thousand-year-old farm there. I mean, you can go visit the it's a pretty amazing basic forest.
The oldest cover north of the Italian Alps, if I'm not mistaken, is there.
I think that's correct. And there's the famously Murami Rothenberg is buried there with Alexander Wimfen, who rescued his body. The Maril is buried there. And there's the Chavis Yar, who, as I talked about, you know, we can mention that he comes after. Rabbi Yusuf Shamish is there. So it's a, you know, real titans of Jewish Jewish history are buried there in Worms. A very important kehila, part of Shum, Kehila Shum, as you mentioned. By the Crusade, one of Vermeisa, Worms, so extremely important community. And so Rabbi Yusuf goes there, and you mentioned in this Haggadah, which, okay, is a Likud, but it's a Likud from a Kadman, very different story when we talk about the Likutim. And so he does, in the beginning, in the front, you know, he does lament the fact that he says he's an Ani Ve'evian, and this is what he did, and he was all busy his whole life with this, he had no time, this is what he had to do, being a Shamish and doing all these little things. And, you know, that's why he called Rabbi Yusuf Shamish, that's what he did, but we know he has Sfarim. And I just want to ask you also about, you mentioned Mais and Nisim a few times. And what's that? That's, I think, was that, correct me if I'm wrong, that was the only work of his that was published, right, for a while? Was that originally his son published that, I think?
There was the first work that was published by his son. His son when Worms was the Jews were expelled from Worms in the end of the 1600s. I'm forgetting exactly the year. So he ran to Amsterdam, and he published it over there, Mais and Nisim, which is basically a storybook. It seems that the original Mais and Nisim was written in Hebrew, and it was translated to Yiddish in order to make it more accessible. But what's it's actually interesting, you find in a lot of the Genizas in Europe, in the, you know, the shul attics that they've been pulling out, you find copies of Mais and Nisim more than any other sefer. It's very, very interesting. So over there, he has a lot of different stories. And again, it was the only one that was published. It was the first one that was published, and then later was the Minhag Yivam Maizah.
Which is, Minhagim are pretty new. The Minhagim were published, I think, Tafshin Memches, is that I'm looking at the Shabbat. I think it's not, they were not published that long ago. No, 40 years ago?
There was copies that were being circulated that the Chavis Yor was writing Haris on. There were definitely copies, yeah.
Yeah, and this has to do with the different, you know, print culture versus manuscript culture. We know manuscripts used to circulate, even in the era of print in Europe. But printed, it was only printed by Mechon Yerushalayim. By the way, it's in two volumes. It's in print. It's beautiful. Like I said, it's a really extensive introduction. Rabbi Binyamin Shlomo Hamburger also has something in there besides for Professor Zimmer. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on in there.
All the notes on the bottom.
Right. He has notes and intro. There's a lot in there. So, but getting back to this and him. So let's just mention some other things before we dive into the Agadah. So Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem is the grandfather of the Chacham Tzvi, right? And the Chacham Tzvi talks about that he made a Goyim, and everyone always knows the morale, but the Chacham Tzvi is a Tshuva and Chacham Tzvi, where he has a Shaila Goyim, he's Tzarev Dominion, and he talks about his grandfather, Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem, making a Goyim. So that's, this is who he was. And like you said, so when we look at his farm, I don't know if you want to mention his other farm now, but you see he came, you know, his Rebbeim, he was at the time when there were still Mekubali Ashkenaz. Do we see any of that Kabbalah or Remez or that type of stuff in his works, Rabbi Yosef Shamash?
So let me touch on Rabbi Leo Loans for a second, and then discuss that. So Rabbi Leo Loans, first of all, his kever is also in Worms in that same Beis Hakvaris, and till today he's a place where people go who need Yeshua's go and daven there, because he was definitely a Baal Shem, which means someone who gave out Kimeis and those types of things. Who he himself was a Talmud of Rabbi Kiva Frankfurter, but also besides for that, I think it's not so well known. But he was the one who was Misader. He went to go learn in Krakow, and when he was there, he found manuscripts of the Darkei Moshe, which were unorganized, and he's the one who organized them, which I think is the Seder that we find it today printed in the Torah, the Darkei Moshe from the Ramah. And as a gift, the Ramah's son gave him the Pirush on Zohar that the Ramah wrote in the Ksav Yad. He gave it to him. So this was definitely a person who was on one of the high Madrega of that door, a person who was really shaped history. That's Rabbi Leo Loans, and his Pirushim are around and in print, many of them. On the Megillus and other Svarim. But regarding the Remez and Kabbalah, these kinds of things, so that's why I started off that he's coming at the end. Where what is the difference between the Kabbalah of Hasidei Ashkenaz and the what people call Lurianic Kabbalah? So in a very simple terms, the Kabbalah of Hasidei Ashkenaz, Rekeach, Yehuda Chosid, and others, is basically using numerical values to give more meaning to whether it be tefillah, whether it be gematrius in the Torah, or other kinds of remazim, as opposed to Lurianic Kabbalah, which is pushing further into mysticism and giving mashalim and other kinds of esoteric ideas. Levels to the Torah, so it's definitely a different style, and you can see it right away. So he in Rabbi Yosef Shamish's Svarim, he is using the Kabbalah of Hasidei Ashkenaz, bringing gematrias, bringing these types of ramazim throughout. Although the Haggadah itself, the Pirshan Haggadah, is very much pshat, very much explaining what's going on. He asks questions, gives tirutzim, but often his tirutzim will include these types of gematrias, some of which you can find earlier. Now, what's very fascinating, now that this, I think this is pretty clear, that he's not a Lurianic Mekobo, and he doesn't use that Mahalach. What's interesting is that this manuscript is made up of four parts. There's the part on Tefillah, There's the part on Birchas Hamazon, there's a part on Pirkei Avos, and then there's the Haggadah. So in the Haggadah we printed is actually included the Birchas Hamazon, because Birchas Hamazon is part of our Haggadah. So you have two out of the four parts in here, and part of the Tefillah also, Hallel and Nishmas, we also included in this Haggadah. But in the Tefillah, he writes that he's taking this from the Siddur of Rev Hertz Trevis, Rev Hertz Shatz. So that's the Likud part. He's being malakit from there. He writes that. The Birchas Hamazon, he writes that he's taking it from Nosson Shapira, who is this basically second generation Poland, right? He was the Rav of Grodno, Talmud of Reb Shalom Shechna. So he's second generation Poland. And then the Pirkei Avos, he writes that he takes from the Medrash Shmuel, which is Reb Shmuel ben Uzida, who's a Talmud of the Ari. That's what's fascinating. Because the Rav Hertz Trevis is definitely Hasidei Ashkenaz style. Rav Nosson Shapira, it's not even so much Kabbalah, but it's also a similar idea. But what's he doing taking a Likud from the Medrash Shmuel? What's it doing by him? Why, first of all, why is that a sefer that he is finding something to be malakit from? And it's not his style. It's not from his Beis Medrash. It's an interesting thing to note. And I don't know if I didn't notice that the historians were pointing this out, but it's something very interesting.
Interesting. And so we'll get into that Gada now. We'll get more into some of his farm at the end. And interestingly, although this is the first time that part of this Likutei Yosef has been printed, it was used because we know that Reb Seligman Ber in his Avodas Yisrael Siddur, he had access to this manuscript and he used this. So it's not, and that Siddur obviously was published and very used. So it's made its way somehow, some way into Svarim, even though this is the first time it's being printed. Okay, so and we'll talk about the manuscript and the other Svarim after that. So let's jump into that Agada. You mentioned, this Agada, yeah, you want to go ahead, you can take it. It's a Likud. I just want to say it's a Likud. They say the Kuti Yosef, but it's a Likud. It's his own commentary. You there's Remez, he has, but he has chat. Go ahead.
Well, he doesn't say what this is a Likud from. The other three parts, he tells you where he got it from. On the Haggadah, he doesn't bother telling you. And if you look up a lot of the Torah, it's hard to find. Some of the stuff is very similar to other things, but some of it seems to be original. So we don't know if he was feeling that it was a Likud because he was being matik from what his Rabbeim told him, or was he using a sefer that we don't have today, or is it something that we just haven't come across yet, or he's being malakit from multiple different svarim. So that's something very interesting.
Now let's discuss the Haggadah itself and the commentary. As you said, it has the introduction about. Now, that introduction is the introduction to the Haggadah, or that's an introduction to the whole Likutei Yosef that you put here in the Haggadah?
No, it's an introduction just to the Haggadah, and also there's an introduction just to Birchas Hamazon. In this same manuscript, there is actually a fifth part, which I didn't mention, which is that he was very proud of his last name, which was Menatzpach, which is all the Osio Sophios, all the letters that have a enda letter, as we call it. So, and he says that it's a mishpacha miyucheses and a whole arichas. He goes on and on to discuss that. So that's a couple of pages at the end of the manuscript, which I think actually on the inside page. Yeah, we ended up putting it on the inside page after the cover. You can see, I think there's two of those pages we used as the background. So you can see just a little bit of what he was writing, but he has all sorts of gematrius and all sorts of stuff going on about there. But no, this is the Hagadoma to the Haggadah Shal Pesach. Yeah. So one of the first things to mention before we even discuss the Haggadah is what is the difference between the 2023 edition and the 2024 edition? What happened? So obviously
Okay, you want to talk about that? Now I was going to first tell the listeners about the Haggadah, the commentary, then we can get into that and the manuscript and whatever. But if you want, you can go for that.
Okay, so let's first do the Pirush.
Let's talk about that God, and then anyone that still wants to hear about what the difference is, because obviously this is the one that's accessible. So let's talk about this first. So there, you have the introduction. Does he say what, he said, he doesn't say who he's quoting from, but what's he doing stylistically? And then are there some examples that we can talk about what he's doing in the Haggadah?
So the Haggadah starts off with 132 questions, 131 questions. I apologize. They were actually misnumbered in the Ksav Yad, and we fixed that. But there's 131 questions, and the Birchas Hamazon, I think, has 39 questions before it. And in there, he lists all the questions that he's going to deal with throughout the Haggadah, Some of the questions are pretty standard. Some of them are quite interesting and questions that everyone asks, but simply doesn't, you don't find the Mefarshim discussing it or don't discuss it head on. And he actually takes it and just asks the questions as is and gives a pirush to it. I mean, one of the obvious questions is why is Kalach Manya in Lashon Targum? And why does it then switch and things like that? But he asks also all about the different, why we use certain vegetables for the charesis and for the maror, and why is there, he says that there should really be a fifth question by the Manishtana, and many, many questions that are just simple and straightforward that most Haggadahs, I can't say all, but most Haggadahs, you don't find them being mesiachas to it, to them discussing it at all. So that is definitely something interesting. And then, obviously, he was a sefer, so the Ksav Yad is very beautiful. That's what the cover is. It's the actual Ksav Yad, but it doesn't include all the pieces of the Ksav Yad. So the whole beginning part of Bidigas Chametz and Erev Tavshilin and even Kiddush, he doesn't have in the manuscript, and there's no pirish to it. But we added it in based on the nusach that was mekubal at that point. But just some examples maybe unique, maybe not the only one who says it, but something unique. One of the things that I would point out is by Dom Ba'ish for Simeris Ashon, where the minig is that we take a drop out of the cup by each one of these words, Dom Ba'ish for Simeris Ashon, and by the Ten Makis and the Tzachadash Ba'achav. So actually, this piece we took from Birchas Hamazon. He discusses it over there, and we put it in the right place in the Haggadah. And he says that if you count up how many times you take a drop out of the cup, it's 15 times that you take it out, and that's connected the 15 pios, the 15 sides of the charbay shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the sword of the Rebbeinu Shleilam. And it's a remez that we should be saved from all churban and from all ra. And then the next piece is actually something very interesting, which to me, it's every time I read the Haggadah, it's something that bothers me. Rabbi Yehuda, Yenaisamem, Simonim, Tetzach, Hadash, Bachav. And everyone says, wow, Rabbi Yehuda was really, really told me something brilliant here. He made Rashi Tevis. So what exactly is the grace of Chiddush of what Rabbi Yehuda says? So he explains, other people explain as well, but he explains that the machloikis over here, with the makis dava ach b'yachas like a shtayim is in a two shtayim. What is going on? What is the discussion? So he says that Rabbi Yehuda is telling you that they work in three parts. There's the tzach dam tzvardei akinim was one set, adash which is orev dever shchin is another set, and ba'ach which is barad arba choshech is another set. So it's really three sets, and the bays just didn't have a partner, and that's why it ended up there connected to ba'achav. That's why it ended up over there. And then he says, so this part I found in one other Haggadah, Naftali Svarotzin, maybe it's another, but also pretty early Pirush. I think it's from Naftali Ginsberg, if I'm not mistaken, right? Naftali Svarotzin?
I think that's who it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then he adds over here at the end that he says, Zubim Medrash, which is in a Medrash Rabbah, he brings that on the Mate, Moshe's Mate, it said, Tzach Adash Bachav. And over there, V'omer Rabbi Yehuda sheze ois v'simen shahayu hamakis mishuloshen. Uchenegdan omer akosu b'erchazok v'zoyde tuyo v'mer agadah. That it's the same Rabbi Yehuda. He wants to say that Rabbi Yehuda and this Rabbi Yehuda is the same Rabbi Yehuda who says it's mishuloshen, and that's why that's Rabbi Yehuda in the Haggadah, which also comes out in another chiddush, which is that oisais u'moivsim isn't being marbed anything. It's just saying that these makis were oisais and moivsim. So he has these kinds of, this is just an example. It's every single piece in Haggadah. That's why it's such a geshmak in Haggadah. It's such a pleasure to use because every single piece, he discusses it, he dissects it, and he doesn't cover over anything. He doesn't gloss over to try to get out of the question.
Yeah, he really brings everything down. So it's interesting. He has those 131 questions. You know, Barbanel does this and others do this. But then he also has throughout, he has many questions. But as you said, he has remez. He also has a lot of pshat. I just found something here. I'll just read. He says, Avadam Yinu Lepari. And he says, Ratzalema means to say, Lemelech Atzma. He says, Lepari himself. Shuhu Melech Kosher, Melech Pekipa. I'll just, you know, paraphrase. He says, Lepari himself. Wasn't Pari didn't have somebody else he can go to. Pari himself. He was the main boss and he was in charge of everything. And he says, also, we were in Mitzrayim. What does that mean, Mitzrayim? We were in Be'ira in his city, Tachas Yad HaMamash, right there on bottom. It's not like Avodim that they're in someone else far away. You know, it's like an absentee king. No, they were right there. He was right on top of us, right in charge of us. We couldn't do anything. And then he says, Mitzvah Leinu L'Saper, HaNigla V'Alchalamar V'L'Saper, Gam HaNister. So he brings you know, it's Nigla and Nister. That you really see what you were talking about earlier, that he has these two things that he's trying to go with. But it's extensive. There's a lot of pshat in here. And, you know, extensively asking many questions, giving answers, going through it. And, you know, like you said, it's, you know, the whole Haggadah. I will say, we should mention that it's not a very big Haggadah. It's around 100 and, I'm trying to think how many, it's like 150 pages, the whole Sefer, right? You made it hardcover, beautiful cover, really, very nice. And I already mentioned here that there may still be copies available in America. There'll be a link in the show's notes to order this through Kol Achsani Shel Torah. I think it's $25. And that includes shipping cost in that.
Plus shipping.
So plus shipping on top of that. Now, that, if it's still available, you get it for Pesach. You may not. I know Beagle-Eisen had some. Jacob Plaza and Lakewood had some. I don't know if they still have as of when you're listening to this recording. So they may not. But otherwise, you can order from Kol Achsani Shel Torah. If not, it'll be available after Pesach. And so just wanted to put that out there. Now, let's talk about the manuscript, because there's an interesting story to this manuscript. It's around, you said it has an interesting history. And so let's talk about its story and where it is today. One thing I do want to ask you, though, the manuscript, you said it is in your abuse, but this is Ksav Yad Kodesh. This is his handwriting?
This is definitely his handwriting. And what's interesting, before we even discuss where the manuscript's been, which is more of a something interesting to historians, but even to everybody, the manuscript is it gives you a glimpse into life of that Tkufa, the way he spells things, the way he writes things, his expressions. So I know that in the Minhagim you see it a lot, that he's not makbid on Lashon Zachar, Lashon Nekeva. He just switches back and forth. It wasn't a thing to be so careful with that. And over here his spellings are all over the place. The bases and the pays switch all the time because they used to pronounce bays and pay the same way. I think I once told you the story that there's a Sefer Torah that someone has showed me that that one of the words is spelled with a bays instead of a pay, and it was been around for 350 years. No one noticed, and it's an Ashkenazi Sefer Torah. And the reason why no one noticed is because no one ever realized the difference when the Baal Keri was reading it. They pronounced the bays and the pay so similarly. And another example is a aleph and a hey or an ayin. But actually, throughout the manuscript, he writes the Haggadah Shel Pesach. He writes it Haggadah Shel Pesach with an aleph, and some of those we switched. The ones that were glaring, like in the koteret, in the title of the Hakdama. So over there it said Hakdama Le Haggadah Shel Pesach. So that just looked too bizarre. So that we actually changed. But most of the way through, you can see that we left in the words Agada. But these types of things are very much a specific style and from a specific tekufa, which is something very interesting. But then regarding the actual Ksav Yad, so where it's been. So it started off, obviously, in Reb Yusuf's possession. And when Worms was destroyed or the Jews were thrown out, in 1689. So it's unclear what happened to it. There's two options. Either it was left somewhere in the shul, you know, somewhere in the basement, or in someone's house. It could have been, and it somehow survived. The other option is that it was taken out, and who it might have been taken out by might have been Reb Yusuf's son-in-law named Shmuel Zanvil, Seifer, who was actually his memala makain in Worms. And the reason why I say that is because his name is inscribed in the front of the Haggadah, in this manuscript. His name is inscribed in there, this Reb Shmuel Zanvil. So it could be that somehow he took it out and brought it back when he came back from Hamburg. He ran away to Hamburg, and when he came back, it could be he came back. Why do we think that it came back? Is because the next time we find it is there, again, in Worms. We find it by Reb Michal Sheher, who was an Av Bezdin in Worms. He became the Av Bezdin in Tavkuf Lamed Ches, so that's 1778, right? So that's 100 years after Yusuf passes away, and it's again back in Worms. And from there is what you mentioned earlier, that this, it moved on to Reb Yonah Bandi. Reb Yonah Bandi was the brother-in-law to Rabbi Marcus Lehman, right? The Rav of Mainz. And he had a large collection, actually a lot of svarim around today that bear his signature, that show that he owned it. And the way that we know that it belonged to him, besides that I believe it's inscribed in the front of the manuscript, and I'm remembering exactly, but also in the Be'er Seder, Seder Avodas Yisrael, he says that he got to look at this manuscript from Rabbi Yonah Bandi. So that was the last place that we know it's been. And then it ended up in the Schocken collection, which was obviously in Germany. And then right before, when Hitler came to power, I think they shipped it to Yerushalayim. And then it was sold, I'm forgetting the year, in the early 2000s, if I'm not mistaken. It was sold to the Berginsky collection in Zurich, Switzerland. And so that's where it is till today. And we actually give a big thank you to the Berginsky collection for allowing us to print it. The obvious question that I've been getting from a lot of people is, well, what about the rest of the manuscript? So when's that coming? So as I said in the beginning, the only part here that you won't find elsewhere, in other words, the part of Birchas HaMazon you can find in the Pirush of Nasan Shapir, which has been printed. The part on the davening is the Hertz Shatz Siddur, which is around. You can go to the farm store, you can buy it today. The Pirkei Avos again is in the Medrash Shmuel. You can find the Pirush there. Obviously, there are differences. It's not to say that it's an exact copy, but the other three parts are found elsewhere. The part on the Haggadah is the part that is really unique and is the most important part. And the Berginsky collection was not happy to necessarily let it go to print, but after a long discussion over a year worth of discussion back and forth, they gave permission for the Haggadah Shel Pesach. So it's possible that we will bring the rest of it to print, Be'ezus Hashem. But the part that's unique is definitely here in front of everyone and is available today.
Yeah, and definitely they deserve a thank you. It's amazing when a collection and when an owner allows something to be published, a manuscript that's never been published before. And I don't know, I'm not an expert on this. Hopefully it doesn't hurt the value. If anything, you wouldn't think it does. And it's a real zechus at the end of the day that it gets printed and that the collection allows it to be printed. So that's really great. And like you said, does, you know, the picture, you do thank them clearly in the Sefer for allowing you to publish it. And so there's that. And, you know, as you mentioned, you added in the text of the Haggadah. You also added in some Yiddish or Yiddish-Deutsch songs in the back. And that's not in Haggadah. Is that because he references that you should sing these? Is what he used to sing? Where did these come from?
So if you look at the end of his Pirush, let me just find it in here. At the end of his Pirush, forgetting exactly what page it's on, but basically at the end, it's not mamish the end, but it's towards the end, he writes that you should sing three songs. You should sing the Adirhu, Chad Gadya, and Echon Miyadeh. And then he says you should sing it in Yiddish. But he doesn't actually write the words in Yiddish for us to know what his nusach would have been. And even the way that he spells the first couple of words of it is different than the way that we would spell it today in Yiddish, because obviously it's not Yiddish, it's German, but be that as it may, it's a bit very similar. But the way that they would spell it and pronounce it then is a far cry of the way we would spell it today. But the most famous of these three is obviously Adirhu, which is known as Bondine Temple Shira, which means to build the temple, build the Beis HaMikdash. So that's a more common one sung in many, many homes today. The other two, which is Echon Miyadeh and Chad Gadya, those are found in old German Haggadahs, and that's where we took the text from. So that's that.
So that's included in here as well. But you didn't include obviously didn't include the translation. It's in the original, so any the Yekis can say it, or even non-Yekis, if you want to learn it, you want to be able to say it, you can say it. Something interesting also, the Salayat of the Haggadah, you put the Haggadah in the middle, and you have the commentary on the side. So it's like a Rashi Tosfos running on both sides, and sometimes it's even very narrow. So it's very nice, you know, it's an interesting... you've seen, there are some Haggadahs like this, the new edition of Marble Lasaper, Tia Weil, has this, the one that I have jumps out at me, that has the same way, which, by the way, that we were talking about this, you said it's available. I don't think it's available anywhere. I haven't seen it. I've got it used from Mizrahi, but that's a great Haggadah. That should be available, widely available. And so that's the story with this. So like you said, maybe you'll print more, maybe not. We'll see. But let's talk about,
the,
you know,
printing is not the trouble. There's plenty in Eretz Yisrael. There's hundreds and hundreds of copies.
No, I'm talking about, no, not that. I didn't mean that. I meant the rest of Likutei Yosef. So I should be clear. The rest of the manuscript. Now, I don't know. Did you mention how you found out about the manuscript? Like, how did you find out about this manuscript that there is a Haggadah from Yisrael Shamish and that the manuscript is by the Braginsky collection? How did you find all this out?
So that's an interesting story. Part of the work in the Kollel that I do, which is why I have a shutef in running the Kollel, is that the Kollel is a regular Kollel where the Avreichim are sitting and learning halacha. They're learning the sugyas and they're learning down to halacha lemaisa to be able to paskin. And we just finished after 2.5 years learning Nida, and they're taking fahers by the biggest poskim of today. And Baruch Hashem, we've been getting a lot of very good feedback about the level of learning. But what we do in addition to the regular learning is we bring in all sorts of stuff, manuscripts and out-of-print svarim. Particularly, we're focusing on Western Europe only because that's we got to focus on something. But it's definitely there's an unbelievable amount of stuff there, and a lot of times I spend many hours a day in the National Library of Israel, which is. Well, Matana Toiva that this generation has been given the ability to have access to millions of svarim and manuscripts across the world. So in their brand new building way downstairs in a bunker, they have this beautiful reading room where you can access all of these types of manuscripts. But this I found a while ago, so it was still in the old building. And I came across it in a few different places. One of them is obviously in the notes to the Minhagi Vermeiza. Over there, they do bring pieces from here. That's not a secret. They quoted it extensively, especially in Hilchos Pesach, for example. In Hilchos Pesach, in Minhagei Vermeiza, he doesn't actually write very much. So they brought a whole quote from over here, the Likutei Yosef, to make it more mushlam, a davar sholei. That's one place I saw it. I saw it in a few different places quoted. So I went looking for it, and everyone's been quoting it that it's from the Shakin collection. And eventually I found out that it was sold, and that's when I started reaching out to the Braginsky collection in Switzerland. And eventually that's what led me there. Now, one of the things I think I didn't mention, just by the way, about the Haggadah, is that throughout the Haggadah, there are instructions on what to do. Now, some of those instructions are from Reb Yosef Shamish himself. He wrote them throughout the Haggadah. Many places, he just didn't bother telling you what to do. But you'll find in the introduction, whether it be in his Hakdama, or in his Kashis, or in his, what he calls over here, the Seder Shel Pesach, or in various other parts of the Pirush, you'll find instructions that are there that he didn't end up writing in. So all those we brought in the right places. We copied it and brought in the right places, and we put like a little black box in front of it to tell you that that's where it came from. And then any place that didn't have anything to tell you, but it wouldn't be right to just print the Haggadah without telling people what to do, we put our instructions in brackets. So there's a lot of work that went into this, which is the difference between this one and last year's edition. I think now I can just discuss for a minute what the difference is. So last year we were putting out a Madrut Bikoret, I would say, but it was more than a Madrut Bikoret because it was already a Davar Mushlam. It was something ready to go. And again, a lot of people came over to me afterwards that there are mistakes in this. I go, how can you print it? The mistakes that people were finding in the Pirush weren't my mistakes. They're Reb Yosef Shamish's mistakes. And for that, I can't take responsibility. He sometimes made mistakes. You'll find a few times he didn't even want to cross out something that he knew that he made a mistake. He would just put it in parentheses to try to make it look nice so that there's no cross outs in the manuscript. He was obviously a very artistic person and appreciated the look of a beautiful manuscript. And so last year when I went through it, I put it in exactly the way it is, word for word, letter for letter. But this year, the Mahalach, which I think is the more standard Mahalach when people publish a manuscript, is that they fix up things. So there's the editor's rights of some sort to go and fix up these kinds of things. So that's definitely one of the big differences. And also last year, the main text of the Haggadah had gotten corrupted. But this year, it's actually the words for the main text of the Haggadah and even the Nikudis. It's very important to point out that the Nikud that he had was different than the Nikud that we use today. So these are all nuances but interesting, very, very fascinating, and really allows us to understand who he was and everything that he toiled in.
Yeah, and it's really a beautiful production. It's a high quality. You open it. You know, sometimes you buy a lot at Yesfarim and I open it. It's this one is the glue is good. The safer opens well. You have, as you said, the end papers on both ends, the front and the back. I really have the, and it's not the same from the inside. It's different. You have the picture of the manuscript you can see, and right, it's two different. Then you have the front cover and the back cover. You have pictures of the manuscript. It's really done very well, nice. It's really beautiful. A lot went into it, which is really nice, and that also increase the cost somewhat, just to make clear to the listener why it's expensive, and you have to fly this in, and they're a little heavy, even though it's such a small safer. So there's that, and so okay, this is now what you put out. I don't know. I'll give you the opportunity now to talk about it. So you mentioned Kelach Sani Shel Torah. We talked about it on the previous episode, and it was an article in Mishpacha Magazine. For those interested, I can try to link to that in the show's notes. You can search for that and find that article for those interested in reading about it. But if you want to just tell the listeners here a little bit more about the Kelel, and really more so about the Machon aspect here on Sfarim Chatter, about the Sfarim, what the Machon is looking to do, trying to do, what you're working on, if there's anything that you could reveal to anyone that you're working on, is anything that you're looking for assistance with, what's in the plans?
So in a one-liner, the difference between Machon Achsani Shel Torah and the other Machons that exist is that we're sort of focusing on the Sfarim that are not going to bring in tremendous profits and revenue, that they're going to be super, super popular. But Sfarim that are going to be to people who are interested in learning, people who are interested in high-level scholarship, those kinds of things. So, and one example is definitely this Haggadah, which is going to speak to someone who's interested in something from 400 years ago, from someone who not necessarily they heard of, but it's a manuscript and something very interesting. One of the Sfarim that is about to come out, which I guess when this goes live, there'll still be 2-3 weeks for someone to put in a dedication, which would definitely be helpful to make sure that these Sfarim keep coming. That is the Amir LeBeis Yaakov, which I think we discussed briefly on the past one. Maybe we'll do another podcast on that one. I don't know. But that is a sefer that was used by every woman in Germany. This was the sefer that she used to know the mitzvahs that she's mechuyevin, nida, Challah, Hadlakas Saner, and Melicha. Those were the mitzvahs, and this was the sefer that was used. It was printed in German. Today, it was a little pamphlet. It was 40, 50 pages. Today, it's a 400-page sefer with notes bringing it to a level where the Talmid Chachamim are having enjoyment from it and are appreciating it, and to see what he said, what he didn't say. That's another kind of a sefer. We're working on many other Sfarim. Yeah.
I want to jump in, just Amir LeBeis Yaakov, and yes, you showed me you had a printout in the paperback just as before pre-publication. Really beautiful, extensive introduction. By the way, it's been translated now to Hebrew, and also it's Yibischuk Dov Levi Bamberger. This is the Wurzburger Rav, your grandfather, great-great-grandfather, whatever. But and so this is a very chashuv sefer. So now it's in Hebrew, extensive notes, additions, etc. And perhaps we'll do another podcast episode when that comes out, Mr. Shem. So we'll leave that. As you said, you're still taking dedications. And for those interested, I'll let you finish talking about other projects you're working on. But you can say your email address. I'll put it in the show's notes. And for anyone seriously interested, they can, unless you want to give your phone number, they can contact me. I can put them in touch with you. Anyone seriously interested. But anyways, continue.
So that's Amir LeBeis Yaakov. There are many other Sfarim. It's obviously too much to discuss. We have many things that are being worked on simultaneously. Some are manuscripts, some are mixtures. Like, for example, in the Amir LeBeis Yaakov, there's many tshuvas that we put in the back. Some of them are from the Yad HaLevi and other Sfarim from the Wurzburger Rav, but some are from manuscripts that are being held by various libraries or even private collections. And the same type of thing I was discussing with you, we're planning to do on the Gedulei Tahara from Remendel Kargo. So over there, there are, 40 tshuvas or something like that in the back, known as the Shut Gedulei Tahara. But Remendel Kargo wrote hundreds and hundreds of tshuvas besides for his Chidushim on 8 Masechtas, which are B'Ksav Yad, and lots and lots of other stuff. So we're planning to make that into a giant sefer, that it's something that should be in the base medrash, that people should have access to. These are tshuvas that literally shape the mahalach hapsak of Klal Yisrael, and the Mikar Chaim Tver Tzvi is another sefer which is getting ready to go to print, Be'ezus Hashem, which is Reb Schneir Ziskin Gundersheim, one of the Dayanim of Frankfurt, who wrote a dual pirish on the Shulchan Aruch Hilchos Nida, and used as the basic sefer is the Chavrusa of the Sidrei Tahara, and is a basic pirish on Shulchan Aruch. The Mikar Chaim part is like Piskei Dinim, and the Tver Tzvi is Harichos. There are lots and lots of svarim that are in the works, and people who they speak to should reach out and give chizik, because it's a huge undertaking. And Baruch Hashem, we've been seeing Siyata Dishmaya, it can't even describe it.
So, Amen, it's kolashkenaz.org. That's kolleashkenaz.org. I'll put that in the show notes. You can check out the publications and different things there. You can purchase the Likud Yosef Haggadah there. I'll put the link. You can be contacted. Is there an email address that anyone can reach you at that you want me to put in the show's notes?
Email to sefarim@kolashkenaz. So S-E-F-O-R-I-M at.
Perfect. So I'll put that in the show's notes. If anyone wants to email you, there's also a parsha. There's a parsha. It's bi-weekly that comes out. Hopefully.
It's officially a bi-weekly. But when we're putting out sefarim, sometimes it gets sidelined. There's also the podcast that go along with the parsha sheet now. I took inspiration from you, and there's also a for those who are more Yekish leaning. In other words, the stuff that we do over here is more for the general public, and you know we're obviously focusing on Western Europe, but this is everyone can appreciate this. But for people who are more interested in the minhagim of Yekish Jewry, there's also World of Ashkenaz. There are WhatsApp. There's a WhatsApp group, and there's a Substack known as worldofashkenaz.substack.com. I think it goes something like that, where you can see short video clips and these kinds of things, which are all very, very fascinating. And Be'ezus Hashem, Hashem should give me the koyach to keep going.
Okay, so yeah, Be'ezus Hashem, you should have the koyach to keep going in all these different all your endeavors and really putting out these svarim, you know, especially these archashiv svarim from Ashkenaz, from Germany, that really a lot of them, whether it's manuscript or editions of svarim, like they haven't been redone, that should be redone. And so that's it. And this is a really interesting Haggadah. So for those interested, like I said, there may still be copies, maybe not, but you can definitely order, you'll get it at some point. And thank you, Rabbi Hellman, for joining me once again.
Okay, thank you, Nachi, and really a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
Chag Kosher v'Sameach to everybody.
Chag Kosher v'Sameach.